Hi, everybody. My name's Chris. I'm a fully conceited alcoholic. I like to share that because it's something that I learned in the Big Book on page 30 that said we learned we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics, that this is the first step in recovery. This isn't my first time in the program, but what I've learned in the past that when I came back into this program, I needed to have a sponsor and I needed to work the steps in order for this to take root. And so today I stand in front of you with a sobriety date of August the 29th, 2015. I have a sponsor, I've worked the steps, I have a home group. I'm the secretary of that home group, which is the Great Facts Saturday Morning Men's Discussion Meeting, which is meets in Greenwood on Saturday morning at 10 a.m. at Greenwood Christian Church. We'd welcome any guys that would like to come. It is a men's only meeting, and the cool thing about that meeting is it's a really neat format. Started in Los Angeles and was brought here by a friend of ours who brought this meeting, and the format is basically a bunch of guys just kind of hang out and share what's going on in their sober lives today. It's not a topic meeting, it's open discussion. You're free to share it with whatever's going on. Encourage crosstalk, as long as it's non-confrontational and loving. But sometimes we get up in guys' faces and tell them things that they don't want to hear. And when I know when I came back, they shared a lot of things with me that I didn't want to hear about myself. So what I'm going to share with you is kind of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today for me. And I'm eternally grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. This program has once again saved my life. It's saved my marriage. It's saved my business. And I have friends today that I never had before. And I'm eternally grateful for that. I'm the youngest child. My parents gave birth to me, I guess you could say, in the suburbs of Chicago. I'm 44 years old, and I have two older sisters. Really wasn't alcoholism in the family, even though there was a lot of people who drank. My mother's a Catholic from Scotland. And she's about 4'11", and she's got the wonderful Scottish brogue, and I learned that real well, and I used to try to pick up chicks in the bar with it back in the day, so believe it or not, it worked, and especially after you had a few, and they've had a few. My dad's a hillbilly from Missouri, and so I'm kind of a polished redneck, so somewhere in the middle there. So I went to Catholic school, and I never felt like I fit in. And I know that's something that we talk about in these rooms, and I know, remember one of the first things when I look back is, I got into a lot of trouble in grade school. I always wanted to stand out for some reason, and I always tried to be the class clown. I didn't take school seriously. I remember stealing my parents' cigarettes, and going down to the river. I was in South Bend, Indiana at this time. And hanging out with kids I didn't need to hang out with, and always doing things that I didn't need to be doing. Let me just say one thing. Part of my story does include the use of other substances. And if I'm at those other meetings, I'll relate as being an addict. But here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I talk about being, an alcoholic. But if I'm at another meeting, sure enough, I'm an addict. I've done just about everything that you can possibly do. Not proud of that, but it's who I am, it's what my story is. So if you only have experience with alcohol, or as my friend Mickey Bush likes to talk about, you're a specialist, then you might not relate to what I have to say. But so moving on, we moved from South Bend to Greenwood, Indiana in 1986, and I went to Center Grove High School. I never really felt like I fit in. I didn't really belong with the jocks, even though I played sports. I really didn't belong with the nerds because I didn't have the GPA. I didn't fit in with a lot of people. But I had a couple of friends here and there, and I made it through high school. My first drink that I remember was my sophomore year of high school, and I got drunk. And I threw up, and something happened. I automatically felt like I fit in. It was a strange thing. It gave me a sense of belonging, and it gave me kind of removed the nerd in me. It kind of allowed me to feel comfortable in my own skin, as you hear, and that was really true for me. when I went off to college, I just kind of followed guys. I really had no plans or desire at that time. I went to Vincennes University. And at the time, it was one of those schools that if you apply, they'll take you. It's a junior college, you know, so that'll kind of tell you what my education was like. And I joined a fraternity, and I did all the things that you're supposed to do when you go to college. And there I started to experiment with other substances, things got bad. My first semester there, I had this great idea that I was going to do great in school, and I had a 3.8 GPA. I was president of my class, and things were going great. And within a year and a half, my GPA dropped to 1.9. But I was drinking and using pretty much every opportunity I got. My parents would send me $50 a month, and by the end of the weekend of me getting that, it was gone. So I was stuck on the meal plan and all those things. So after my third semester, my parents decided they had enough, and so they pulled me home. And then I came home, and I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I remember my parents caught me stealing money from them so I could go out and do some things that I wasn't supposed to be doing. And I didn't really have any friends or anywhere I could go at that time, so my sister felt sorry for me and allowed me to move in with her in Bartersville. And I basically became someone who started to surf on couches. And that went on for a while. And then the next thing I found out about was this band called the Grateful Dead. And so it was real easy for me to jump into a Volkswagen bus and sell grilled cheese sandwiches and nitrous oxide in parking lots. I managed to make it to 106 Grateful Dead shows. And was able to see Grateful Dead shows in about 30 different states. I couldn't even tell you. I remember waking up one time and I was in Minnesota. And the night before I was in Chicago, and that's a real long drive. So, as my disease progressed, things never got any better for me. Around 1997, I was homeless. I was living in a Nissan Maxima. And my address was basically that carport there or that carport over there, wherever I could find a place to go. But I really didn't think I had a problem because I managed to keep a job until I got fired from that job and was able to get another job. I was always good in sales, so I was always able to sell myself to other people. But at this time, I started to get arrested and started showing up in jail and started to have a criminal record that would follow me. Then I met this girl, she kind of got along with me, we kind of did some of the same things together, and she had a place to live, so I landed on her couch. That was when I took what I believe is my first hostage, because that's what we alcoholics do with our lovers. We take hostages. We don't take spouses. We don't take boyfriends or girlfriends. And that's what I did. And we almost broke up several times, and I always managed to worm my way back in. It was right around 1996. We were living on the south side, and she had put her foot down and said, "This is it. I can't stand you doing what you're doing." And I was introduced for the first time to some sort of substance abuse program, and I went to adult and child mental health, to an IOP program. And there, what I learned was words like trigger, and how to blame shift, and I didn't learn about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous or the 12 steps. They didn't talk about those things. They talked about the things that gave me excuses for why I do the things that I did. So it never got better. I'd quit for a month, and then I would go off on another spree again. Then right around March of 96, I was diagnosed with testicular cancer. And she had kicked me out, she was going to pretty much end things with me. But when you crawl back to somebody's door and say, "I've got cancer," of course they're going to take you back, especially when you make all these promises that I made. And that was something that I was notorious at, was making promises to people and never keeping them. So we got back together. I went through two surgeries, lost one of the fellas, so you can, I hang to the left now. But shortly after that, we got pregnant. And so, you know, it was one of those things. We weren't certain if what was going to happen there. And I certainly didn't know if I was going to function like normal men. And, you know, when we read the big book, we talk about normal men, and I'm certainly not one of them. But so we got pregnant, and it didn't take long before I was back off on running again. And it was about a year and a half into my daughter's life that my daughter's mother, you know, basically left and left me in the apartment, and my life was seriously went downhill. But I never stopped. And I tried. I really did. But I could never stop drinking and using on my own. It just continually got worse. Until one day I kicked her door in while she had another man in the house. That's something that you can't do because you pick up felonies that way. Yeah. And when you already have a couple of other charges, things don't go well. So I ended up in the Marion County Jail, and my family hired a really good lawyer. And I got an opportunity to go to a place called the Beacon House, which is a halfway house. And I went there for 2 years. The first year I was court ordered. About the second year while I was there, I had nowhere to go afterwards. I was introduced to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous at that time. My first meeting was on Shortridge Road. I think it's called Solidarity. It's a Wednesday night speaker meeting. And they had donuts there. You know, I remember that. I can't tell you who the speaker was. I can't tell you what I heard at that meeting, other than at that time I didn't think I had a problem. I just needed you to get off of my back. And I knew I needed a place to live because I didn't have a place to live, and I certainly didn't want to go to prison. And so whatever options they were going to give me other than that jail cell, I was going to sign up for, and I did. And so I went to meetings, and I had a sponsor, and I kind of worked some steps, kind of did some things that they needed me to do, but I didn't stay sober. And after my court order was done, I didn't have two nickels to rub together, even though I was required to have a job. And so I asked them if I could stay. And I was there about 9 months before they caught me drinking and using again, and they kicked me out. And I went and pleaded with the people at the Progress House to take me. And they let me in, and I managed to stay there for about 6 days. And the next thing you know, I was homeless again, and off and running. And I still had that Nissan Maxima, so I still had a place to live. And I was still able to find a job as a waiter. And I still knew how to sling things on the side, which I had learned from my Grateful Dead days. And so I got back on the road and started following this band Fish around. And then after that, I got involved in the rave scene. And so it just went downhill from there. So fast forward a little bit, because I don't want to sit here and talk about my drunk logs all day, because believe me, there's plenty of stuff there to talk about. I was working as a in 2004, I was working at Dreyer and Reinbold. I found an opportunity to try to clean myself up, I got a job selling cars. That's what my dad did my whole life growing up. My dad was excellent at it, and as you can tell, I like to talk. So I got a job selling cars. I was working at Dreyer and Reinbold, and somehow or another, I got on there. I managed to pass their drug test by keeping some urine inside my pants in a Ziploc bag, and so I was able to fake the test. And I was doing well there. I was, you know, making about 70, 80 grand a year, but I was drinking it away every night. I managed to keep a small apartment, and had a girlfriend, and we broke up, and I was once again all beside myself. And On a Sunday morning at 9 o'clock in the morning, I was in a drunken blackout and crashed a dealer car into a woman on her way to church. I blew a .42. I should have been legally dead. I was also under the influence of Xanax and had a whole bunch of other stuff going on. And I woke up in a hospital bed with my legs handcuffed to a hospital bed. And I was at Wishard Hospital, which was back then. And somehow or another, they decided to let me leave. My parents had to drive past the car wreck, by the way. The accident happened on 135 and Olive Branch Road, if you're familiar with Greenwood, right in front of a funeral home. Imagine that. I was driving an 04 Passat. And if you know anything about German cars, the rear axle of the car was really about 500 feet from where the accident was. They had to drag me through the window. The woman that I hit today is a very good friend of mine. Her name is Robin. She's actually my insurance agent, believe it or not. But that's the truth. She had to be taken to the hospital, a portion of her spleen removed. And my whole eye socket was fractured. And if you look at me real close, you can see I'm kind of cockeyed, no pun intended. Anyway, I woke up in the hospital, and my parents were there, and they had to drive past that accident on a Sunday morning. And when they went by it, they had been called and said, "Hey, your son's been in an accident." They had used the jaws of life to get Robin out of her car. And she said that when she saw me coming, I was slunched over the wheel. And this was on a 9:30 in the morning on a Sunday. So the police let me leave under my parents' custody because they didn't want to take responsibility for my eye, and I needed to have surgery. And the next morning, I checked into Valley Vista Hospital. And I stayed there for about a week and a half. And I can tell you today, after really searching my heart, that I wasn't there to get sober. I was there to hide. I was there to hide from the cops because I didn't know what was going to happen. And I really thought about running. And so what I did from then on is I started going to meetings. And I started listening. And I had a little piece of paper that I would take. And I would get signed, and I got a sponsor, and I kind of started to work some steps. I knew that I seriously had a drinking problem, and I was starting to believe that I might be an alcoholic. And I stayed sober from July of 04 until sometime around 2006. And when Brian Reinbold wouldn't give me my job back, and the police hadn't knocked on my door yet, believe it or not, I didn't know what to do. And when I got out of Valley Vista, the craziest thing happened. This woman, Robin, who I had hit and almost killed, she sent me a card. And the card invited me to go to church with her. And she forgave me. And she even offered to pick me up. This woman showed me what grace was all about. And, you know, I say that today because she's still a real good friend of mine. And about that time, I started using some of the skills that I had learned through rave promotion and all that stuff. And I started producing contemporary Christian concerts and working with some really big names in Christian music and doing some really neat things. And I met this girl who was a recovering Amish girl. She was raised Amish and convinced her to come here. She's actually in the crowd today. And we met online through bigchurch.com. And what I did is I failed to grow in my spiritual condition. The Big Book talks about that. You know, I thought I could replace Alcoholics Anonymous with church. And church has got a great place in my heart today, but I can't tell somebody that I go to church with that I thought about drinking today and they are going to understand. I can't explain to somebody, you know, that I'm an alcoholic, you know, and I don't think right. And so I walked away from AA, and it was all too unfortunate, because after I'd convinced this recovering Amish girl that she needed to marry me, you know, and I was sober for, you know, about 5 years, I went back out and I thought I could drink again, and it doesn't work that way. One thing that did happen is those charges ended up following me eventually from the car wreck, and I was put into Judge Gregory's recovery court program. And while in that program, you know, I managed to stay sober. Again, doing what I had to do in order to get the fire off of my back. I'm always really good at that, you know. I can play recovery really good. I'm one of the best at that there is, you know. I can sell you know, catch a popsicle to a woman with white gloves. You know, I'm that guy, you know. But at the end of the day, the reason I said earlier, you know, I'm a fully conceited alcoholic is I learned that on page 30 that I really honestly have to remember on a daily basis that I'm an alcoholic and I can't take one drink. You know, drinks that people take with impunity, the Big Book talks about. And I had convinced myself that I could. I convinced my wife that I could because she didn't understand what alcoholism was. She didn't understand that when I take a drink, something happens inside of me. And so we got married, and I went back out, and I stayed out for a few years. And then I tried to come back in July of 15, and again, it was just a matter of trying to, you know, convince my wife that I wanted to do this. And she gave me an opportunity, after I went back out again, to walk away. And I thought I wanted to go to Colorado and smoke legal grass. And I've got a job today that allows me to work from home. And I've got a really good job, the kind of job that, you know, people really want to have. Because my coworkers are my two dogs. And, you know, I start my day in my pajamas. And, you know, by noon, I'm lucky if I get into the shower. But, you know, she gave me an opportunity to leave if I wanted to leave. She gave me an opportunity to decide what I really wanted. And even though she loved me enough to once again show me grace. And I came out to the mailbox on the Wednesday before I got sober, and there were divorce papers. And it really... there was an advertisement for divorce attorneys, and me being in enough trouble, I know what happens when you start getting advertisements, and then the next day is when the papers came. So I didn't know what to do then, and we had talked about splitting up, and but she was serious about the divorce, and so I did what all good alcoholic addicts do, is I went on a bender. And I had nowhere to go. I had no friends. I had no family. Nobody wanted me except one person, and that was my dealer, because I had money. And I showed up on my dealer's doorstep, and I spent 2 days there. And on a Saturday morning, my plan was to pick up and go pick up a U-Haul and move my 2014 Lexus IS, which I was able to afford. And myself and all the few things I could fit in a U-Haul and go to Colorado. And on that Saturday night, when I passed out, I don't know what happened, but I don't remember if I prayed. I don't remember if what the scenario was, but I woke up in the middle of the night and I just had this clear idea that I couldn't leave, that if I left, I was gonna die. And I knew where I was headed. And I didn't want to die. I knew that. I didn't want to lose my parents. I didn't want to lose the little bit of a life that I had once again clawed to have. I had a nice house. I had an amazing bride who loved me in spite of all the crap that I put her through. And later on, I'm gonna read you something. But so I knocked on her door. I left all the drugs at my dealer's house. I left the alcohol, and I went to this little restaurant and had breakfast and waited, because at this time it was like 7:30 in the morning, and I knew she wouldn't be up yet or wouldn't want to see me. And I went back and told her I was going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous and I was going to get sober. And that's what I did. I got here on August 29th of 2015. And I came in here with this sincerity this time that the Big Book talks about. I fully conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic and that I needed help. And I couldn't do this on my own. Every time I would quit drinking, my life was crazy. And every time I would drink, my life was crazy. And the Big Book talks about there's no human power that could have relieved my alcoholism. And that was true. So I came back and... I got a sponsor right away. I had had enough experience in doing this that I knew what I had to do was work these steps to the best of my ability. And I got honest this time. There were things that I always left out of my four step. And I shared the most deepest, darkest secrets that I thought I would never tell anybody with another human being. And the things that happened inside of me after doing that was amazing. I started to work on my amends. Most of those today are living amends to my family, because when you've been in and out of the program as much as I have, you don't have many real friends. And when you go back out, as I know today, and seeing friends of mine that go back out, it hurts. When you sit in here as a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous and you see people go back out, it hurts. So today I realize how much I hurt people by going in and out and getting, you know, start over tokens. The crazy thing is back in the day, as my sponsor teaches me, people used to get sober about 75 to 80% of the time when AA first started back in the olden days. And what they did there that was great was is they took people through the steps in about a month. And so I got busy. So when I came back, I got seriously busy. And I worked these steps to the best of my ability. Some things that I really love in the book, Big Book, it talks about being a recovered alcoholic. And I kind of buy into that philosophy. I know there's some people who think that, you know, whether you're recovered or you're recovering, you know, the word recovering barely shows up in the Big Book, but the word recovered shows up in there a bunch. It shows up right in the foreword. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. You know, that tells me that if I do the things that this Big Book talks about, that, you know, I can recover. You know, recovered, it's past tense, which means that we can recover from that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And for me, I know where alcohol and drugs took me. And I don't ever want to go back there. My life today is absolutely, it's absolutely amazing. I wish I could tell you, you know, that I stayed in this program from day one, because I couldn't imagine how much better it would be. But I can also tell you I wouldn't be married to that recovering Amish girl either. Another thing I love about the Big Book is on page 24, the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into consciousness with sufficient force of memory the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. And that's me. You know, I couldn't remember all those times that I came back into this program. And just like I had explained to my wife, I think I can have a glass of wine with dinner now. I've been sober 5 years. You know, I got sprinkled at the church. I got dunked. You know, I'm saved. You know, but it doesn't work that way for an alcoholic. When I take a drink, something happens inside of me. You know, there's a physical craving followed by, you know, this cuckoo clock up here that tells me, you know, well, if one is good, two is going to be a lot better. And everything is like that for me. Even food is like that for me today. One thing I will tell you is when I walked in these rooms, back in these rooms in August of 2015, I was about 245 pounds and I was a 40 waist pants. And after I was sober for about 2 months, I made it up in my mind I was going to get healthy. And like any good alcoholic, I went 100% at it. And I started doing CrossFit, and I started eating right. And so today I'm happy to be a size 30 waist and about 165 pounds. But that's just part of the solution. You know, as it says on page 25, there is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. You know, I had to get sober with another, I had to get honest with another person. And that's why when it came to doing, you know, my fourth and fifth step this time, I didn't leave anything out. I couldn't, because I knew what I had to do in order to stay sober, or else I was going to die. You know, I quote page 30 of the Big Book. regarding being, you know, fully conceded to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. If you come to my home group, we read the first page of the chapter more about alcoholism on page 30, which, you know, most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily or mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts that we could prove we could drink like other people. And it continues to go on. But if you come to my home group, we read that every Saturday. And so it's a reminder to me that, you know, I've got a program and I have steps that I have to follow on a daily basis. And I have to remember on a daily basis that I'm an alcoholic. And the beautiful thing today is I don't have to drink. I know that I have an option today. I know that if I take that first drink, I don't have a choice after that. So, you know, I can't tell you again how blessed and grateful I am that you asked me to come speak tonight. It's been a real privilege. I heard this is the oldest meeting in Indianapolis. Now, that's pretty awesome stuff. You know, today, just a couple things that are going on in my life. My wife and I are building a new home. This Saturday, we are having the privilege of moving. And from what I hear is if a marriage can survive a move, they can survive anything. We have the option to move twice this year because our house is not done yet being built. So we have to move into a rental house. Last week, while we were moving stuff into the rental house, we found out that there was a water line going to the refrigerator that was leaking. And so they're now in our rental house replacing the subfloor. And so, you know, when crazy stuff like happens today, I don't drink today. And that was always my solution in the past. You know, it's not my solution today. But, you know, for me, alcohol always worked. And I talked about using other substances, but the thing is, alcohol was always there. I never had to sit in a parking lot and wait for alcohol to show up. You know, I never had to page alcohol and wonder if they were going to page me back. You know, it was always there. And it was the first thing that I tried, and it was the last thing that I did. But I'm grateful today that there is a program that has a solution. And today I try to stay in the solution instead of out of the problem. And I know that the problem is me. So that's all I got. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.